Oh, hold on, I gotta sneeze.
Don't do it.
It's gone.
It's gone. That's the worst. Well, hey, thanks for having me on, dude.
You have not been on in a long time. Do you remember the last time your voice was on this show?
No.
It was Fartconomics. It was...
When in the world was that?
It was like 10 years ago.
That sounds about right.
We were talking about the world's first fart. And
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
Was I over at your house or did we do it like this?
We were at the engaged encounter.
Yeah. Oh wow. Okay.
We were trying to go to sleep.
That's
and we
funny.
Started fucking around. And then
I've been doing this. I'm like stuck with it.
Yeah, we've been doing this for 12 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one will be like the 445th one.
Yeah. That's my lucky number. Did you know that?
445?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Completely joking.
That would have been really strange if that was true.
I might play that on the lottery if I ever go to Florida, though.
Look, you can manifest it. If you want it to be your lucky number, it's your lucky number.
Hey, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, I was lucky that we were both assigned to each other for that.
I know. That was pretty strange, wasn't it?
Weird. Yeah.
It was also strange that like four other couples were getting married the same day as my wife and I.
Oh, how about that? Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of people. One couple had the venue right before we did, like at 2 o'clock, and we had it at 6 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was like slightly late to your wedding. I don't know if you noticed.
No, I had a lot going on.
You were up there. I made it.
I was at your wedding. Was that your wedding? Oh, so your wedding was on a Saturday, as lots of weddings are, as was mine. I was working, so I came to your wedding on my dinner break.
Nice.
Like, cause what time was yours? It was like six. Okay. So yeah, I popped in for the actual ceremony on my dinner break. Cause I had some control over when I took my break.
Heck yeah.
And then after the news was over, I came back at like, you know, 10 and
yeah, you got the reception.
Came to the rest of the reception. Yeah. Yeah. That's like my memory of it. It was like I popped in, I left, did the news, came back. Everyone was still there. Stuff. Yeah, my wife was still there and everything. So I just
I think I remember Tara being there and you not for a little while.
I just sort of popped in, sat down, I was like, all right, cool, what's everyone doing? Where's the food?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I wish I could have gone to our party because I hear it was a good party, but it was like, you know.
I hear the same about mine.
I remember my hand hurt the next day from shaking so many people's hands.
Really?
That happened to you?
No, but yeah. I don't engage or touch people. So
I specifically remember being like, God, my hand is just sore and hurts because I shook so many freaking people's hands.
Did you get to eat your own food?
Barely, dude. We had like, I think at some point the, what do you call it? The person who like helps you out and plans all the stuff at the venue.
Yeah. Yeah. The
I think she was specifically like, look, I brought y'all all this stuff just so you could eat it kind of a thing. Like here's the things you asked for and enjoy them.
Someone brought us plates of our stuff. Cause that was the only time I got to eat the crab cakes that I insisted we have.
Thanks. Yeah.
And so I had like a little bit of them. And then by the time I was like free to go get more food, oh, they were gone.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had like oyster shooters. I don't know if you remember those. Ooh. And I think I had one of those.
I don't know if I even ate. I must have. I would have.
I know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But pretty good, man. Yeah. Good memories. And yeah. I guess speaking of memories, I think every year we've watched like Home Alone 1. And then for whatever this. Yeah, like Claire was like, I definitely want to watch Home Alone this year. And so, of course, we watched that. And Anna was like, what about Home Alone 2? I was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess we can watch it. And then, you know, I had like no memory of the whole thing. Like, do you remember it at all? Like, from, yeah. Like, when was that you watched it?
Well, I watch it a lot. My kids really like those two movies. So I've seen it a lot in the last several years. But even before that, I think I'd watched Home Alone 2 a bunch. So when you'd said it's been a while since you've seen it, I was like, wow, like, for me, it's just always been Home Alone 1, Home Alone 2.
Yeah, right. That's, Home Alone 1's like that with us, I guess. But I bet you I went like 10 plus years without seeing Home Alone 2.
Wow.
And I've got like theory. I don't know if it's a theory, but I've got this silly little theory about like memories.
Okay.
And I swear, and I'm sure you've run into this too, where like if I was like, you know, Connor, what's a movie you haven't seen in 20 years, but you know, you watched as a kid, you'd be like, you know, Tiger Man 2 from 1988. And yeah. I watched it when I was 5 years old, and I'd be like, all right, now tell me all about it. And you'd be like, I don't know anything about it. And then we'd be like, all right, let's sit down and watch it. And it'd come on and it'd be like, oh, I remember that scene. I can't believe I forgot that. But like now I remember it. And like you can recall it as you're like getting jogged on it. But there's like a problem with recalling it or something.
Yeah. Memory is weird like that. Like a lot of it seems that like we have a whole lot of subconscious stuff, but like it really has to be provoked for it to start working.
Right. So that's how Home Alone 2 was with me.
It's kind of like when I got shingles, like the virus was dormant. It was there in me. It's always there, but something had to like flick it and make it come alive.
Yeah, getting a little push start there.
I prefer Home Alone 2 to Shingles, vastly.
I would guess so, because I really enjoyed it, and I don't think I would enjoy Shingles as much.
Shingles is terrible. Shingles is worse than Home Alone 3. Well,
Home Alone 3 after this.
let me set it up. So, Home Alone 2.
Of all the familiar sounds of Christmas, surely this one is the most beloved. Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
My family's in Florida and I'm in New York.
Funnily enough, we never lose our luggage.
Once again, the family that loves staying together.
Can I help you? Reservation for McAllister?
Couldn't be further apart.
He's in New York.
This is a vacation.
Only two things could ruin this vacation, and they just hit town.
Hiya, pal.
Kid always wins against two idiots.
Oops.
Did you guys give up? Have you had enough pain?
Never!
What kind of idiots do you have working here?
The finest in New York.
Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
You wearing aftershave?
That's kerosene.
Now why would anybody soak a rope in kerosene?
Merry Christmas.
Actual, the official title is Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. So this came out in 1992, once again, written by John Hughes and directed by Chris Columbus. And returning star Macaulay Culkin, Joe Pesci, Daniel Stern. And then we've also got Tim Curry in here. And then Catherine O'Hara and John Hurt are back as his parents. So Home Alone 1, Kevin gets left at home when his family flies to Paris, I think it is. And so then the wet bandits try to burglarize the house. He stops them. He sets traps and everyone's fine. And Christmas is happy. In Home Alone 2, Kevin gets separated from his family at the airport and they fly to Florida, I think it is. And he gets on a plane to New York and, kind of gets himself set up at the Plaza Hotel while his mom tries to figure out, okay, where in New York is he? And let's, yeah. And then the Wet Bandits are back and they ultimately have, we have another third act trap setting at another residence that is Kevin's uncle's house that's being renovated, which provides for a lot of interesting and fun and painful setups.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal.
The Rotten Tomatoes score on this movie is shockingly low. Like the first movie, really? By the way, the first movie only has like a 66. I don't even think it was like particularly, I think people were kind of mid on it even at the time. And then like it only sort of subsequently became like, no, this is a classic. This one has a 35. Like it's rotten. Like it's not even a, it's rotten. A 35%. The summary, the consensus says a change of venue and more sentimentality and violence cannot obscure the fact that Home Alone 2 Lost in New York is a less inspired facsimile of its predecessor. And to me, the movies are, that's, I think that's kind of harsh because like, to me, the movies are, that's what you want out of Home Alone. And I don't know what you know, sometimes with a sequel, you want them to take characters different places and for them to grow. And sometimes it's like, you know, I usually wouldn't want a movie to repeat its premise. And after this movie, they tried to do Home Alone 3 with a whole different cast. And then they tried to do 4, which is a god awful movie. It's terrible. 3 is like, okay, but it's just sort of like, oh, this isn't Home Alone. It's not Kevin McAllister. It's some other kid. And
yeah.
But like Home Alone 4 is horrible because that's a different kid. Adults. It's not. No.
That's what I think. So I was hesitant about that with number 2. Cause I kind of remember that I think as a kid, like probably watching the, you know, third and fourth ones and being like, nope, these aren't any good.
No.
So when it was kind of like all right, well, we'll try number 2.
I was kind of obsessed with the third one when I was a kid because they make heavy use of like cameras and remote control cars and a bunch of stuff that I was into. And so I was pretty awesome.
They played into the, Talkman. You're in the Talkman.
That was in this one.
That was in 2. Yeah. I completely forgot about the Talkman.
The Talkboy was produced for this movie. It was a planned tie-in between, Fox and Tiger Electronics. Like they were like, we want to have
one as a kid. Definitely like worked on me.
I had one too. It was amazing. I think I used one and I was like fucking around with this movie. Like I was like going like credit card, you got it. Like, you know, making it slow down. And
I like an extra large room with a TV. And one of those little refrigerators you have to open with a key.
Yeah, because I found that tape like years later and I was like, what is this from? What am I talking about? And I like Googled the line and I was like, it's Home Alone 2. It's where this toy came from.
There it was.
Yeah, it was a planned tie-in, which is crazy. I was like, wow, I thought that was just heavy product placement. But that was them going like, hey, you like that Talk Boy? Guess what? It exists. Whee! You can buy one.
So did you look into the history of it at all, or like
of the talk, the talk
of,
boy,
of the talk boy? Yeah, because I haven't.
I just know that it was tied in with this. Let's see. It was originally conceived as a prop for Home Alone 2 for the lead character Kevin McAllister to use to outsmart adults. At the request of writer John Hughes and distributor 20th Century Fox, Tiger designed and built the prop. The company was given permission by the movie studio to sell a retail version of the toy. And it released 2 cassette recorders modeled after the film prop in 1992 and 1993. The original model did not have the voice changer of the film version and sold only moderately during the 1992 holiday shopping season. Tiger added the feature to the deluxe model, that's what I had, which was released in April 1993, following the release of Home Alone 2 on home video in July and a cross promotion with Life cereal, interest in the toy spiked. Retailers had severely underestimated demand, and as a result, the deluxe Talkboy was one of the most highly sought-after toys during the 1993 holiday shopping season, selling out of stores across the United States. Yeah, I don't think I got a Talkboy until like 1998 or something. Like,
it that's what I was thinking. I was thinking 96.
Yeah, I didn't have one when I was 4 or anything, but no. I had it before I was 12.
Yeah, I bet you it was while I was still at San Ignatius, you know, and I left in, 98 or something? Yeah. And I think it was somewhere in there when we were like in first or like second grade. I guess old enough to use it, you know? Probably like as old as Kevin.
I think my neighborhood friend had the actual gray, like silver Talkboy that you see in the movie.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I was like, oh shit, so cool. I had like a weird see-through blue one.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I remember the one I had was silver. Maybe, I don't know if it was an earlier one or what. I'll have to go check on that.
I think that was the original one.
The writers came up with that. I had no idea. Yeah. Those must have been smart and on their A game.
John Hughes was just like, he's going to have this thing that can do a voice change. You know, like, it's what you want. It's exactly how films should be. Like, hey, I thought of this device you could have. And then some company goes like, okay, we can build that for the film. Could we also sell it, please? Sure, whatever. I don't care. Like, it's fine.
What a great idea.
Yeah. And it sells like gangbusters. And I never even heard of Tiger Electronics until I researched this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Did I still do stuff or anything?
Tiger Electronics still appears to be in business. No, what? Oh, wait a minute. Was an independent American toy manufacturer. Hmm. It has been a subsidiary of Hasbro since 1998. So it
turned into them, I guess. Yeah,
they just kind of got assimilated. But
yeah, sounds about right.
Back in the 90s, they were their own thing. And then nope, the Transformers.
Living off that Home Alone money.
I know. And they're like, shit, do we have any other ideas? They didn't write any more movies. What do we do?
Yeah, they didn't even come up with the idea.
And then G.I. Joe and the Transformers knocked on their door and said, we'd like to buy you. And they said, okay, well, that's it for Tiger Electronics, everyone.
Yeah. Good run.
So yeah, I like Home Alone 2. I like that it takes everything fun from the first film and it turns it up a notch. I think the emotional tone is more mature in this movie. Cause once, you know, him getting left at home is explored and reasonably fleshed out in the first one, him getting left again is treated with a consummate level of like comedic, are you kidding me? And like some serious, like, I can't believe I lost my son again. You know, like, we're terrible parent, like actual introspection, just stuff that gives the film a little bit more weight. And I think that the third act trap house is great. I love that it's a house that's already under construction. So it allows for it to be severely destroyed without really any guilt.
That's true.
You know, as opposed to Kevin's house, which, like, you know, has some
minor. Much can you do there?
Yeah, but like with this one, like, people are falling through floors and walls are breaking and stuff. And, you know, and there's inherent risk being in the house already because it's just an unfinished home. So
it's more chaotic, right?
It's inherently less safe already.
Right.
But it's. You're allowed to have a lot more fun and not care so much. Like, hey, be careful. Those are my dad's floors. Like, you don't have to take care of it.
Man. All right. So that was the thing I noticed was that, I guess the chaos would be like a feminine side of things, right? Like that you're in the abyss. Like that's a feminine thing. Whereas like a house would be like an ordered, like masculine thing.
What do you mean?
What do you call it? Symbolically, like the ocean is like feminine, right? And that's just because it's chaos. Like it's not ordered. It's Mother Nature.
Okay.
So like an unfinished or a broken down house or, you know, apartment would be like a feminine thing. Like you said, like it's chaos. And you can do whatever you want there. Whereas like the ordered house that he lived in Home Alone 1.
Yeah.
You even mentioned like that's his dad's house. Like that's an ordered thing. Like that's the masculine thing. So when I saw number 2, I was like, you know what? This really delves into more of like the like feminine. It was like an exploration of the feminine, whereas the first one had a lot more like masculine things to it.
Well, and I think too, like they are constantly sort of highlighting that the main family dynamic in the movies is always between Kevin and his mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the conflict is with her in the first movie. And the conflict, I think, again, is with, was, I mean, it's with the whole family because he's being made to apologize for something he didn't do or something. And so he's pissed at everyone. But I think it is, again, a dynamic with Catherine O'Hara, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah.
Another thing I noticed was like it's the bird lady in this one. It's not like the creepy old serial killer man. Yeah. The shoveling snow.
Yeah.
It's the crazy bird lady.
Yeah. Yeah. Who I think was also in Angels in the Outfield.
Oh, is that what she was from?
I think she was the foster mother. And I also just think that the stakes in this movie are higher because, you know, we're not just in our house alone, and Kevin obviously gets over that and, you know, has an arc. So like, well, what's going to be daunting to this character? Like, well, he's in one of the biggest cities in the world by himself. And it also just allows Kevin more freedom of movement. He's, you know, you can do more fun stuff with Macaulay Culkin, like have him, you know, mess with the concierge and hail a cab and go to Duncan's toy chest. And instead of just, I'm going to walk to the grocery store and back to my house, he's going to like go be in the city a little bit. And that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought the toy store scene was like, I couldn't quite put my finger on it. That was like an extra, what do you call it, into like the belly of the beast part, right? If we're talking about like that's what that was. But it seemed like New York itself sort of was that. Yeah. So it was like a inner cave thing or something.
Yeah, like they made sure to shoot a lot of low angles to just emphasize, hey, this is a child by himself in this city. This is a very, you know, can be a scary situation to be in. Certainly makes you feel not safe. I think some people were sort of, I think at the time this came out, some people were like, Harry and Marv again? Like, that's kind of weird. I love it. I don't really care that it's a contrivance that they just ended up in New York. I think
they
kind of seem
like they're from New York in general, didn't they?
They do. And I like that, because you can almost see, like, as soon as Joe Pesci like thinks he sees Kevin, you can even see it on his face. Like, that can't be the kid from Chicago, can it? And like, when they'd realize it's him, like everyone is justifiably surprised. Like he's terrified. He screams and runs. Because not only is it those two, but we're in a whole different city. We're in a whole different time zone. And we've run into these two people again.
Isn't that funny, though? That's like a truth to life, though. And that's even like ties back into what we were talking about with the engaged encounters. Like, how did we run into each other twice?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just the kind of thing that happens for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And that really stood out to me in that movie. And I was like, that's an interesting little truth that they put in there that they might not have like meant to put in there. But that's just how things seem to work.
Yeah, I'm shocked to see that Rotten Tomatoes score because I just think it's fun. I don't know if people.
Yeah, have you talked to any of our other friends or anything, or like your friends about it? Because all of my friends that I talked to recently, after I talked to you, they were like, "Yeah, it's better than the first one."
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I always figured like I like it more. Like, you know, I mean, the first one's gonna be a more. Anytime you have a franchise, the first one is usually gonna be the one that feels the most complete. And the most tight. And then it's like, it's studios that go, hell yeah, that made a lot of money. Like, let's do another one. And so you can do another one that can still be good. And then when the studio goes, let's make more, then it's like, okay, well, how many times can Kevin get robbed? Mm-hmm. How many times are his parents going to leave? Like, that's no, you know, some people say yes, and they make movies that don't hold up to scrutiny.
Yeah, it's more of a cash grab for the rest of them, but it didn't feel like that to me for Home Alone 2.
No, I was talking to Dustin about John Wick, and it's interesting because like those movies are really good. There's four of them. I love all of them. I think they get better with each one they make. And they have finished them. Like they have given the film a conclusion, but Lionsgate kind of was like, we might make more of them though. And the director and Keanu Reeves were both like, okay. And because if you're Lionsgate, it's like, these are making a lot of money.
Right.
And
business-wise.
And you guys don't have to be involved, but we're going to get someone to make more John Wick. So then you're trapped. Like, if you're Chad Stahelski and Keanu Reeves, do you go, okay, I guess we'll make the fifth one because if someone's going to make it, it should be me. This is what happened with Lana Wachowski with The Matrix 4. And it's even in the script. It's even like mentioned on a meta level in the movie. Like, Warner Brothers could have made a fourth Matrix with or without the Wachowskis. And so then it's like, what do you do? Do you allow them to take your creation basically and, you know, ruin it?
Yes.
Or do you, that's what you should do. You just go like, okay, fine. Like if it sucks, like at least my name's not on it.
My art and I'm taking some money too.
Exactly. Like, you know, you're not, or do you take the job and say, well, the safest hands are my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I guess, what Chris Columbus and John Hughes and everyone did on this franchise. Fox was like, we want to make more. And Macaulay Culkin and John Hughes and Chris Columbus all were like, no, thanks. and they made other stuff. And is that what happened here? Because I don't think, no, John Hughes did write the third one, actually, I'm seeing.
How many more things was Macaulay Culkin in?
Like movies?
Yeah, because I don't think of him as anything else, but I don't know if that's really the case. Like, I know he's in like the Nut thing, right, from the 90s.
Let me look at his filmography. So
sure, he was stuff, but
the first big thing was Uncle Buck, which is how John Hughes, you know, sort of suggested him for this to audition for this one. So then there's Home Alone, Home Alone 2, and then yeah, The Nutcracker. Getting Even with Dad, The Pagemaster, which I really, really, really love.
Forgot about that.
Richie Rich, Party Monster.
So he's in a ton of stuff.
Well, and then 94, and then that was kind of it. And then in 2003, there were some small roles in like some indie films like Party Monster and Saved, you know, Changeland, and a little bit of TV. But for the most part, he kind of just did his own thing. A lot of web series stuff and, you know.
Pretty weird, right? Or did he have some kind of like controversies when we were kids?
He had a friendship with Michael Jackson at the time. So there was some of that. He did have some drug issues. But he just got his walk of fame, his star on Hollywood Boulevard.
There we go.
Like a few weeks ago.
Hey, look, it's meant to be.
There's a YouTube channel I really like called Red Letter Media, and they do movie stuff. And he just randomly was like a guest on one of their shows at one time. There's no fanfare. There was like, hey, Mac. And he was just like, hey, guys. Like, it was just completely ignored. Like, holy shit, Macaulay Culkin's here. And so like, he'll show up every now and then in their videos, and it's never, those guys live in Wisconsin and they even credit him at the end as Milwaukee Culkin. They don't even call him his real name, but it's like, how do they know Macaulay Culkin? And so anyway, so
he must be a pretty cool dude.
I love Macaulay Culkin. I've always liked him. I remember when he turned, here it is, in August 2020, on his 40th birthday, he tweeted, hey guys, do you want to feel old? I'm 40.
That's cool.
And it said it became one of the most liked tweets of all time.
Yeah, how about that? I can see that.
The ninth most liked tweet, yeah.
Ninth? Wow. Yeah. I mean, that was like a very truthful comment, and he was, I guess, very self-aware to think to post that.
I don't know if
that is lately with like the Catherine O'Hara, and it's like, if you were born in 1990, you're as old as, like, that seems like that's been going on.
You're
a lot
as old
this year.
As Daniel Stern, you're as old as Harry was.
Yeah.
On the franchise total, like, I think Home Alone and Home Alone 2 are great. My kids really enjoy them. They watch them on repeat. They make sure to point out to me before Harry gets electrocuted and replaced with a practical like skeleton. Briefly, you know, because that's like one of my favorite gags.
That was, kids notice that too.
Yeah, it's funny. It's good stuff. I don't know. But you said you had interesting thoughts about memory for this one, and ironically, the song for the first one, I think somewhere in my memory, was nominated for an Oscar. I was looking at that earlier. Yeah, it was best original song. It didn't win. Neither did the score. But
this is probably going to be a staple for us now. I noticed that Whit was hesitant to watch it. He didn't like the first one. And Claire likes it.
Was he like bored, or did he not like Harry and Marv?
I think the basement scene or whatever with the
furnace.
Yeah, the furnace. I think that got him, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know exactly what it is about it, but I think he likes it more this year. I don't know if he's just a little bit older or something and can appreciate it more. But Claire specifically was like, let's watch Home Alone. And we were like, let's save it.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I want to watch it too early.
My kids will just watch it. Noah will laugh so loud and I'll be like, hey, you need to be quiet, you know? And he's just like, it's weird that there's the whole Mandela effect thing. Like, did you, you know, you thought this, but did you realize that it was this other thing this whole time? And even though you swear that you're, you know, like the Berenstain Bears thing. And
yeah,
we've always talked about that. Like, but like memory in general, as I've come to learn, is extremely unreliable. Memory changes as we get older. Like we influence our memories, like whether we realize it or not, like we subtly tweak them.
You gotta remember, make it up every time you recall it, I guess.
To our liking. Like we enforce patterns and meaning on our memories after the fact, that we connections we did not make at the time. And sometimes those connections are not there. It's just the way that we perceive information. Our brains are pattern recognition machines. So, I mean, there's a reason. I mean, I think like even eyewitness testimony in court isn't even that, like, doesn't carry a lot of weight. Like, you can't just be like, I saw the guy. Like,
man, there's nothing to believe. You can't believe video anymore. If all the,
with deep fakes and AI. Yeah, it's getting harder.
Mandela effects happen left and right.
Yeah, it's getting harder to know. Does this movie even exist, or did we just drink the Kool-Aid? You know,
maybe it's better now because it's a completely different movie.
In terms of memory in this franchise, before I had all these kids and I watched the movie a lot, I probably couldn't have told you which set piece was from which film. Mm-hmm. Like before, like now, obviously I can, because I've seen them so many times. But if you asked me like 6-7 years ago, you know, you play me a quick scene, I'm like, you know, play me 5 seconds of the movie, which movie is it from? I'd be like, oh, I don't know. It'd be hard for me to tell, just to remember. Like, I don't. Now I've just described the plot. Like, it's easy to remember that he's in an old constructed house, but when was he in New York? I don't know. You know, was that the first one? Was that the second one? And you just, if you haven't watched in a while, you really don't know.
Especially us growing up in the South. It's like, yeah, it's cold and snowy there. They must be in New York.
Right. Exactly. It's like, I just see snow. This doesn't help. This doesn't help me. Yeah.
That's funny.
No, but I mean, because everyone looks the same. It's only been like a year, 2 years. So it's not like anyone
is that movie fast, huh?
Distinctly. Man, they used to do that. It was just, hey, it's a hit. Do you want to do a second one? Okay. Mm-hmm. Get everyone back and you can shoot it next fall or whatever.
Dude, so what was up with Tim Curry in there, though? I feel like he was kind of like a confusing character, because I was like, why was he so into that kid?
Why was he? Yeah. Why was he trying to nail him on this crime so bad? I don't know. I think that's like, I think that's one of those John Hughes things where from the perspective of a kid, there are some adults who are just out to expose you. And
that's a good take. Yeah.
It could be as innocent as that. But for me, when I watch it too, it's like, hey man, what's your problem? You need to get a life. It's just
right. Yeah. Maybe that's just like not close to my personality or something. And
there is a part of it where it's like, well, or is he like the only responsible adult who's like, this is weird, right? This kid, his dad's in a meeting. Come on.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you don't like him, but then you go, I don't know, like, he might be doing the right thing. Like, he seems like,
takes the Joker to catch a Joker. You can tell that he's like,
exactly.
Being manipulative or something,
or that he thinks that, like, if this goes sideways, it's kind of my ass.
That's true.
So I smell bullshit and I should probably investigate it. Not because it's the right thing to do, but because I don't want to get fired from this pretty cush job where I just sort of run the Plaza Hotel.
Yeah. So it's kind of like being honest, I guess, telling the truth, right? Which I think is what Kevin did the whole time. And that was kind of his problem, was he was like, he was calling out, what was his older brother's name?
Buzz.
Buzz. Yeah. I wanted to call him Butch. Seems like a butt, but yeah, he's kind of like putting on a show for everybody. And Kevin was like, I can't believe y'all are buying this.
Yeah.
Everybody was sort of, it was like, were they just being fooled by it, or were they going along with it just to like keep the peace? And like, Kevin was the one that was like, no, like, I'm going to tell the truth. And that was kind of, I think part of his problem of getting, targeted or whatever by everybody, or distancing himself from everyone.
Yeah, he values truth over calm or peace or whatever. Like,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I always read the dynamic there as, once again, like, it can feel like everyone's against you when you're 8 or whatever. But I also felt for the adults sometimes, because it's like, okay, y'all, like, I really don't care what happened. Just like, stop fighting and stop worrying about it. But, you know, Buzz has so much power over Kevin and has this ability to just sort of scapegoat him all the time. And, you know, it must be frustrating for that to happen all the time. And then when you try to expose him, everyone's like, Kevin, shut up though. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I know, like, narcissism has been like thrown around the internet a lot lately. So I've kind of read into that, and I've been friends with some people that are like the truth tellers. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like its own little term thing. And I was like, you know what? I think that's what Kevin was. And that's sort of what this movie was about.
Yeah. Pretty much.
The movie's interesting to me as an only child, because I'm like, this is like the opposite of how I grew up.
Yeah. It's terrible. all this chaos. This
seems crazy to me as like a kid. And like, now I'm like, all right, I kind of like dipped my toe in it and got, you know, some more perspective on it. Yeah. So that's fascinating too.
Yeah. I imagine as an only child watching this, like, how could they leave their kid at the airport? But when there's like 12 of them, yeah, it's like, I don't understand how that could even, you know.
Now that I have kids and like stuff to take care of, it's like, oh, yeah, that could happen.
Yeah, I could certainly, you know, especially when you're trying to like walk the line of trying to let my kid be independent. Like, I'm not going to hold your hand at the airport. But at the same time, like, hey, man, it's an airport. That's a small kid. You really need to grab their hands and not... The hilarious, like, they're in the first movie, they're counting heads. Like, they misplace them because they're counting heads, and it's because the neighbor kid ran, hey, mister, and just talking to the, I love how he's like, hey, can this thing, I can't remember what his question was, but it was like,
oh yeah, he was asking some ridiculous like technical question, right?
Is this thing run on the electrics, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's like, oh geez, kid, I don't know. It's like the most adult answer ever. Like, oh shit, kid, I don't know. Please leave me alone.
Oh, I saw a little picture of where his ticket is in the trash can.
Oh, in the first movie?
Yeah, like the beginning of the movie or something.
I only just now noticed that too. The boarding pass gets thrown away or whatever. When they're cleaning up from the pizza spill.
Yeah.
His dad just picks it up and it's just like, boop, boop, it's just paper. Boop, boop, boop.
We're done with you.
It's like, you gonna look at it?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Not only do I look at what's in my hand when I throw my trash away, I look in the can to make sure I'm not about to cover up like someone's toy or one of my shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he's just like, burp, 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 paper, 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 trash, trash, trash. Just throws away. This feels and is about the size of a boarding pass, but I can't be bothered to look down and verify that.
Yep. My life's too simple for this.
Doop, doop, doop. I'll just buy another one. I saw like a picture and someone said, Kevin's father yells at him for having like a $1,000 room service bill. It's like, you know, you left your kid alone twice. Maybe it's just time to shut the fuck up.
when that scene was playing out, I was like, I bet that's going to be like way more, yeah. Like my guess way more than $1,000.
But it's 90s. Like,
yeah. And I was like, oh, it's $1,000.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that bad. Like, good for Kevin.
Yeah. And also like, I don't really feel bad. I don't feel bad for his dad because I'm glad you're alive.
Yeah.
Glad you weren't kidnapped and sold into human trafficking. I'm glad you're fine. And also like, hey, you own like a 9-bedroom house in the suburbs of Chicago. You seem like you're doing well for yourself. Why don't we just, you know, you flew to Paris. Let's just forget about the $1,000 room service bill. Okay.
For him, right?
Yeah. Like I don't know. I know it's just a throwaway line. Like, oh, Kevin, like what do you, but it's like,
really?
Yeah, really, really, man.
Maybe that's why he has so much money. He's like really, really pinching his pennies there.
He's just a cheap bastard. He's a couponer. He's like, it took me 2 years to save $1,000 and you spent it on room service.
That's what he does for a living. He's a couponer.
He just has one of those big binders. That's what's in one of the bedrooms. It's just full of coupons, file cabinets.
Because they never said what he did, right?
No, he just, I'm assuming, just vague finance man.
Probably worked in an office, right? That seems like
just worked in some 90s. Office. Yeah.
Yeah.
His poor wife has to manage that house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Home Alone gets dissected a lot these days, you know, with the movies being over 30 years old and the internet being what it is, there's memes are replete with, like, especially people who want to talk about like mortgage rates and, you know, house prices and inflation and stuff. Like, you go like, Kevin, look at Kevin McAllister's house. You know, it's like, it gets brought up all the time now.
Yeah. I guess that's just gotten magnified lately or something.
And, it could. And it's one of the most egregious examples of like, how could a, like, again, they don't specify what his dad did, but like other like in plenty of movies and TV shows, like it's just one of those movie things where you go, okay, but how could a part-time artist, or how does a gym teacher, a gym coach afford such and such? And then like you watch a movie like Space Jam where Michael Jordan lives in like a $200,000 house, maybe. And like, he has neighbors. Like he doesn't live in like, we were talking about Dustin and I were talking about the new Space Jam movie. And we were talking about LeBron James's house in that film. Uh-huh. And it's like, probably a lot like his real house. It's like up in the hills and it's on like a ton of land. There's a gate. Right. Michael Jordan just pulls up to essentially like a house that's like 2/3 the size of this have Kevin McAllister's house. And there's the driveway is right there next to the neighbor's driveway. It's like, this is Michael Jordan at like the height of his career. And this is a pretty modest house that he's living in. It's almost the anti movie house when you think about it. Like,
interesting.
I guess it's just people going like, hey, look, we don't want to show like a house they could actually afford. That's depressing. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess that, you know, for me, it's like there's more context. It's like, oh, I have a family, like a bigger family now.
Yeah, bigger family, bigger house,
and like a different direction. And then it's like, oh, I have a house now. So now it's like, wait, how is this house enormous?
Yeah.
It's like cartoonishly big.
And again, we're probably overthinking it because it's just them saying, look, it's a movie about a home invasion. There's lots of traps, lots of setups, lots of rooms. It's got to be a big house. And the way we justify the house being that big is it lives in a big family. Don't worry about what his dad does for a living. Stop asking questions. And it's like, I get all that. It's just when there are comments like $1,000 for room service, Kevin, you go, hey, fuck you, man. Shut up.
I guess I could clear that with the New York renovation apartment thing,
and that being part of it too. And then you
save it in space, yeah.
And then you also go like, could he have gone to, you know, whatever the guy's name is? What's the what's the guy, the uncle's house? What's his uncle's
name? Is it like Bob or something?
His uncle.
He's got an Uncle Bob, right?
Rob. You were close. Rob.
Yeah.
Robert. His Uncle Rob. And they find like they're mentioning like, could he have gone to Rob's house? Would he know where that is? And like, he's not there though. Like Rob's in Paris. The house is being renovated. It's like, okay, Rob lives on the Upper West Side. He's getting like a 4-story townhouse renovated, and he's living in Paris while that happens. And so then you sort of just go, yeah, I'm fine with whatever Kevin wants to do to wherever. Again,
like a family of rocket scientists or something. Like, what is Kevin's IQ?
The Upper West Side. Like, and maybe that explains why Kevin's so smart. He comes from a family of geniuses and high earners.
Yep.
You know,
gotta be.
Buzz is going to be some kind of criminal mastermind, maybe. Or Kevin will be. Although
Have the children though.
In the newest thing they did, there was a sixth film. It was Home Sweet Home Alone.
Huh.
It's also not very good. But in that movie, Buzz is a character. Buzz comes back. The actor comes back, and where is he? He's Officer Buzz McAllister. Like, he shows up. He's like some like neighborhood cop.
Sounds about right.
And there is an allusion to McAllister security. It's implied that Kevin like founded and owns a security company, but he doesn't show up. That would be kind of silly, but it's essentially implied that, yeah, Kevin understandably became an expert in security.
Put that on his resume, huh?
Yeah, I thwarted, you know, my parents left me at home twice. I thwarted 2 home invasions.
Did you see the movie?
Yeah. If you're Kevin, then you go, I was on 60 Minutes. Like, at that point, like, does Kevin get, you know, interesting? Okay, here's a fun little factoid. I noticed this while I was looking at Home Sweet Home Alone, which is the 6th Home Alone film.
Dang.
Christopher Columbus, the original director of the first 2 Home Alone films, was also critical of the decision to make a 6th movie prior to the release of the film. On the topic of movie remakes, he said, "In this version of Hollywood that we live in, everybody is remaking everything and rebooting everything. I mean, there's a Home Alone reboot coming out. What's the point? The movie exists. Let's just live with the movie that existed. There's no point in any of us remaking The Wizard of Oz. There's no point in any of us remaking the classic films. Make something original because we need more original material." And that's more of a broad rant about the industry, but it's interesting that he would pointedly say, yeah, why are we making Home Alone movies?
Look, I like money too, but I think we did it. We did it, guys.
I know. And that's really it. Like, there's the thing about the movie business is that it's filled with artists who really want to make good stuff and are not super interested in money or who have integrity. Like, Chris Columbus is a working director. He's done plenty of movies. He can be picky, but with that, that's when you go, okay, like, I'm going to have integrity. Like, I'm not going to just whore myself out to make this movie or that movie. Then there are directors who are just directors for hire. They will direct whatever you throw at them. And then there's like auteur directors like Christopher Nolan or Ridley Scott or Greta Gerwig. You got people who are like, I'm going to make movies, but only if I have like a huge amount of control, because that's the kind of artist I am. And so there's varying degrees of people who make movies. There's people who see it as a job, people who see it as I'm hired to manage a good set and keep everything on schedule, and I'm good with actors and I know how to make good choices. And then there's artists like, I'm going to fucking do some crazy awesome stuff with this movie, but you need to get out of my way and let me do it. And it may not make a ton of money, but I think it will. You know, Christopher Nolan wants to do his terrible sound mixes. That's his prerogative, but people are starting to pick up on that, but it's not really hurting the box office of any of his films. So
I'm sure that's like a super hard line to sit there and walk along. And then, speaking of Bob's, have you ever heard of Bob's Game?
Bob's Game? Oh, yeah. Why does that sound familiar?
It's like a Nintendo game that never was. And it's sort of that, the like situation you were talking about with like artistic control.
Yeah.
Taken to the extreme to where like Nintendo was like, dude, we'll buy your game for like, you know, a couple million dollars or whatever. And the guy was like,
nope.
Well, I don't want to work with a team.
Right.
He's like, well, you know.
They're like, don't you want to sell the game? Don't you like money?
Yeah. And he was like, no. Bob's Game. It's my game.
That's the kind of pull that I always am interested in. I like when movies cover it, but I think that that's just one of those age old, like the whole art and commerce tug of war. You know, that's the movie industry, the entertainment business right now is being so hurt and diluted and, you know, bastardized right now because there's too much control. All these big companies own all these IPs and everything's being made for streaming and we're not paying writers fairly and we're not paying, you know, we're making less and less episodes of things and it's just everything's getting all screwed up and it's the business has taken a hard turn towards the commerce side, but not a lot towards like the art side. You know, for like for like a decade or two, like remakes and existing IP have been the thing and you know, the companies are getting less, more and more risk averse. And so they're not taking chances on new ideas. The DVD market has disappeared. So they are even more skittish about making stuff because it has to make money in the theaters. Cause that's the only way it's going to make money.
Interesting.
You can't make money on DVDs on the back end anymore because they won't sell and you can't license them to streamers because you have your own streaming service now. So you can only get so many more new subscribers to that streaming service with this new movie. Yeah. So then you just have to keep raising prices and it's just
this, competing with like the past too, I guess. Right. It's like you have everything at your fingertips.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge thing. There's a great video essay by this guy, Patrick H. Willems, and it's called Who Killed Cinema. And it's like 90 minutes long and he executes it like a murder mystery. Like he has suspects and like motive and evidence. And it's like all this stuff, like who killed, was it David Zaslav? Was it Marvel? Was it TikTok? You know, like it's,
man, that's a great idea.
It's really, I'll send you the link. It's a really fun watch. It's excellent.
That for the oyster industry. Who killed the oysters?
But like, it's a fascinating topic and it's, you know, I hate to, anyone who kind of comes out and says like, art, man, like kind of sounds like a hippie, but it's like, there has to be like, it's such a temperamental business and it's such a high risk, high reward business. But the problem with the movie industry is that people have, it's too much of a business. It's become a business where we need to make a lot of money and it has to be a sure thing, kind of like every other big American corporation. And it really ought to be looked at as a business where it's like, hey, it's up, it's down. Like it's almost like if you were just to look at the movie business as like, yes, it can be a huge moneymaker if you do it like this and you make everything the same and nothing's fresh or new or provoking, then yes, you can make money, but that's not the purpose of art. That's not the purpose of films. And that's not actually good for humanity because that's part of how we experience life and engage with ideas.
Yeah.
So there has to be an allowance for risky projects that might lose you some money. And just, that's the problem with, you know, Comcast owning a studio and Disney owning a big chunk of stuff. It's just, they're all competing and it's all about dollars. And, but I did, there is hope, like with streaming getting so ridiculous and prices keep going up, like Best Buy had announced like a few months ago, like, hey, we're not going to sell DVDs or Blu-rays anymore. But I think that the home, the physical media market is about to see a resurgence, it looks like.
Yeah.
And I hope that's the case. And I'm seeing like small, like localized rumblings of that, because people are going like, okay, for all the money I'm paying for this and this and this and this and this, and it's not just that the streamers are expensive, it's that some people like HBO Max, they're just pulling stuff off it because they don't want to pay residuals to the creators. The creators aren't getting residuals anymore. And now you can't watch such and such show anywhere. There's no DVD market, and the people who made it or responsible for making it, they took it off their streamers, and they won't license it to anyone else.
Fascinating. So I just bought my mom a CD for Christmas.
Oh my Jimmy God. CD. Whoa.
So there we go.
Wow. But yeah, man, it's crazy. Like I buy physical media, and Dustin has been, anyone who listens to this show knows that we're big proponents of it, because you know, even when you buy, like, forget streaming, even when you buy a digital copy to a movie, you're not buying a movie, you're buying a key. And and they could, for any reason, take that door away.
Change those locks. Huh?
There have been people who bought movies through streaming services who lost access to them when they decided to pull those titles off. It's like, but I paid for that.
Yeah.
And they can just take it. The thing about physical is just like, you got it right here. It's right That's here. Right. Yeah. And it's always going to be right here. And, you know, and for me, they always look better because streaming, internet, buffering, computer screen resolution, phones, like movies always look best when they're being played in a Blu-ray player on a television to me. And that's not even a purist thing. It's just, I empirically have observed that. Like that's something I have always seen. Now I watch most of what I watch on streaming, cause that's just where it is. But but the stuff I like and I want to watch again, I buy it on Blu-ray and I watch it on a television. And it doesn't slow down. It always looks crisp and super nice. And it's not usually the case with streaming. So
yeah, your internet can go out too. Ours will like glitch every now and then. It's like, all right, we gotta let it load.
Exactly. So anyway, all that to say that the movie business is a very different. Someone was asking Joe Pesci, like, would you appear in another Home Alone film, you know, like today? And he was like, why would they make another? He's like, so the world's a different place now. Like, forget like the reason, like, why would we make another one? Like, how would another Home Alone work these days? Like, it's just, we have different priorities now. Like the culture is different. Like it just wouldn't work, you know, it's just interesting.
Home Alone now.
Well, and there's just too many, you know, there's phones. It's just like,
everybody just be like looking down at their phone.
Yeah, exactly.
His iPhone all day.
It would be a lot more believable that they lost Kevin. Cause they're just staring at their phone, you know,
it's like the whole movie is just people looking at their phones.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Kevin's on a phone. The house gets robbed successfully because Kevin doesn't know that there's intruders.
Just doesn't even know.
There's no security system because those don't exist anymore. he's watching. He's not watching a gangster movie. He's watching TikTok. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. That would be interesting.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't want to see any more Home Alones. And as someone who's a big apologist for franchise movies, I'm usually like trying to be like, you know, they're entertaining, but like for me, it's like I certainly want more original stuff to be made.
I wonder where the original stuff is going to start coming from, because it sounds like it got so expanded.
Yeah,
is it going to like contract?
I like think
to the individual almost, well, and it'll be like
you've got some studios like A24 who make original films, and they make interesting films that are not as widely applicable, like Midsommar or Hereditary. Even Lionsgate is a relatively small studio, you know, because when you think of the big studios, that's like, okay, that's Disney, Universal, Paramount, and Warner Brothers. And then everyone else is somewhat smaller. the somewhat smaller ones have the ability to, and you've also got people starting their own studios. So like independent studios, not like, you know, indie films, but like small studios, like Annapurna is another one, and that's owned by Megan Ellison, who's like a billionaire, and she just, that's what she does with her money. She's like, I just started a movie studio and I just seed movies. And it's like, that's what I would do if I was a billionaire. That's exactly what I would want to do, is just, you know, and then just be like, yeah, like just come here and make your movie. And, you know, movies can be made for not a lot of money. Like it's cheaper to make good movies. Like you know, what the thing that's expensive with a movie is the star power and names attached to it and stuff. This Indiana Jones film they just made was the most expensive film ever made.
Was it really? Have you seen it?
I didn't see it.
Should we wrap it up?
Yeah. That's Home Alone 2.
That was awesome. What a good movie. Yeah. Nostalgia factor.
Absolutely. Yeah. If people are going to go further, 3 is not bad, but you really have to reconcile the fact that this is not Macaulay Culkin. It's not Kevin. It's not like it's the same character. Like it's a whole different thing, but I liked it as a kid, but I haven't watched it as an adult really. But the 4th is just horrible. I don't even know what the 5th one is. What is the 5th one? Cause the 6th one was just a Disney Plus thing.
More alone.
Let me see. Home Alone. Okay. Oh God, I forgot about this. All right. So Home Alone 1 and 2, Kevin McAllister, Macaulay Culkin, right? Home Alone 3, the protagonist is Alex Pruitt, played by this kid, right? And then the other 3 were television films. They were not in theaters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Home Alone 4, the one that's terrible. I forgot this. The main kid, it's some other actor, but it's supposed to be Kevin McAllister again. Huh. He's not even blonde. That's the plot of Home Alone 4.
Just pretend.
Oh, forget. Okay, hold on. Sorry. I'll read you the first part of the plot. Peter McAllister, who is finalizing a divorce from his wife, Kate.
Whoa. I was not expecting that.
Announces to their children, Buzz, Megan, and Kevin, that he and his wealthy girlfriend, Natalie Calbun, are hosting the visit of a royal family at her mansion and invites them to spend Christmas there. After the 3 initially refuse, Kevin accepts the offer after being bullied by Buzz and revels in the mansion's luxuries.
You know, I'm sold. I think I might go check that out.
I hate every word I just read. Peter McAllister and his wife get divorced. This family unit crumbles. He has a new rich girlfriend hosting a royal family.
Yeah.
And Kevin McAllister is just like, that doesn't, you know, for you to go walk back and watch those other films and go, oh, what a happy ending. Too bad his parents split up and the house gets robbed by French Stewart. Anyway, that's so funny. There's that. And then like so the 5th one is called Home Alone Holiday Heist. And it's like two, I guess, twins who are the protagonists or something, or two siblings. I don't even recognize this kid. I don't think I've ever seen this. And then the 6th one was in 2021.
Oh, so it was recent.
It's bad. It's really bad.
What's the point?
Home Alone 4, Taking Back the House.
Taking Back the House.
Yeah. Home Alone, The Holiday Heist, and then Home Sweet Home Alone. as Kevin McAllister says about Buzz's girlfriend, woof.
Yeah, that's some good parts in there.
Yeah. So just the 2, please.
There we go.
All right. 2. Well, Tyler, thanks for coming on, buddy. It was good to have you again.
Thanks for having me on, man. That was fun.
We'll do it again.
All right. We'll see you, man.